The Bunny's Curse by Doris V. Sutherland. Bernice considered the exosuit that stood before her, a make widely used in the interplanetary conflicts of recent years. The suit was capable of turning an ordinary soldier into 10 feet of walking weaponry. It had been designed to strike maximum terror into the hearts of the enemy. It had been designed to be sleek and imposing, so that the sight of it would intimidate enemies and reassure allies. It had been designed to be the future of warfare in one metal frame. But that was before it had been modified. She reached out and ran her fingers through the exosuit's downy artificial fur, looked up at the two floppy pink ears that topped off the frame, sighed, and clambered inside. Her mind tried and failed to pin the blame on anyone other than herself. She was the one who, in the middle of Officer Zhang's lecture, had made that disparaging comment about model submarines and the hobbyists obsessed with them. She had known full well that Officer Zhang owned a substantial collection of vintage 22nd century model submarines. Everyone had seen the neatly glued specimens that he kept in his office. She remembered how the other teenage cadets in the lecture hall had fought to contain their laughter as Zhang's eyes drifted from face to face, registering the crack in his authority. That was the moment when Bernice realized that she would be facing some sort of punishment. Many of the exosuits the Academy used for training exercises had been given custom paint jobs or been plastered with a few stickers by previous users. But this one had undergone a particularly drastic reworking. Somewhere down the line, it had belonged to a person who, for reasons Bernice could only guess at, had decided to redesign it as a 10-foot-tall, fluffy, pink bunny rabbit. She had been assured that it still worked as well as any other exosuit in the Academy, but in terms of appearance, it was not standard-issue military equipment. It would certainly never be sent into an actual conflict, yet for the purposes of training cadets, it was deemed acceptable. Happiest days of their lives and all that? Bernice recalled an old army creed she once read in a history book. "This is my giant pink robot bunny," she mumbled to herself as she donned the suit's floppy-eared headset. "There aren't many like it, but I'm stuck with one anyway." Bernice arrived at the pod that had been set aside for the exercise, walking with an air of studied nonchalance and feeling grateful that the suit had not been customized to hop. As she entered the bay, she heard the sniggers of her comrades across the comlink. She took her position, ignoring them as best she could. A sudden judder confirmed that the pod had begun its descent towards the planet below, and the briefing screen at the front of the pod lit up to show the head and shoulders of a pre-recorded video presenter.
"You have been assigned an exercise on the planet Goethe," began the woman in the video.
She was wearing a military uniform for the sake of appearances, but nonetheless had the makeup and general demeanour of an air hostess.
"It was once the site of an experimental Earth colony, populated by psychically gifted individuals. But the entire population was wiped out when the planet's underground hypervolcano erupted a century ago, burying the sole continent in a thick layer of debris."
The presenter's perfect teeth, framed by crimson lipstick, gleamed as she smiled her way through her apocalyptic narrative. This was clearly a sponsored exercise. Some startup company had set up business on Goethe and had supplied this video as a promotional opportunity. Bernice could hear some of her fellow cadets murmuring in impatience and leaned her exosuit forward a little, trying to hear the video more clearly.
"The planet was never repopulated," the woman continued. "However, many people view the deserts and wastelands as monuments to the destroyed colony, so all cadets are requested to treat even uninhabited areas with the utmost respect."
Snorts of derision echoed over the comlink.
"If you plan to return to the planet in your free time, you will find plenty of museums where you can learn more about the fascinating heritage of Goethe," added the woman.
So that was it. The heritage industry had its sights set on Goethe. The image on the screen changed to show a live feed of the planet's orange skies, filled with a cluster of small, rotor-bladed flying machines. Bernice had taken part in enough training exercises to recognize these gizmos, and sighed inwardly. Not the old treasure hunt routine again. Ugh. "We have dispatched a number of target drones across your destination," came the unmistakable voice of Officer Zhang. "Each cadet has one drone assigned to them. The object of this exercise is to use your exosuit's tracking mechanism to locate and retrieve your assigned drone. Good luck, cadets." If it were not so hard to move an exosuit's shoulders, Bernice felt that she would be seeing a roomful of shrugging robots right now. Every cadet knew exactly what they would be in for now. An hour or two of traipsing around looking for drones as each suit's tracking mechanism bleeped out the digital equivalent of cold, cold, warm, warmer, boiling! The pod's exit hatch opened, and the cadets leaped out in their exosuits, using their stabilization jets to ensure that they touched down safely on a stretch of wasteland below. The soil was pristine white, but patches of it shone in different colours in the sunlight, like the rainbow patterns in a puddle of oil. A few buildings were scattered about in the distance, each one its own muted hue. Large shards of scrap metal stuck out of the ground in places, relics not of destruction, but of halted construction. Bernice began to wonder what the planet looked like before the eruption. But her thoughts were interrupted when a cadet wearing an exosuit with embarrassingly bright graffiti daubed all over the helmet approached her. As the cadet got closer, Bernice saw that the graffiti read, "I'm a wide load," and judging by the lack of chipping, had been daubed shortly beforehand by the current occupant. "All set for the exercise, Bernie Summerfield," said the cadet. She recognised the voice. So, Kennan was the first to hit on the punning potential of the situation. Just wait until someone realised the phonetic similarity between rabbit and robot, then the humour would be doubled. Bernice put on a voice she reserved for when she wanted to sound like the only grown-up in the room. "Shut up, Kennan. This suit operates just as well as any other in the bay." She made the rabbit raise its two paws in a pugilistic manner. "Right arm has guns for conventional combat, left arm has implements for specialised scenarios. I may be stuck with a booby prize, but I know my stuff." Kennan's suit turned away from her. Bernice knew from experience that there was always a point when he lost interest in whatever he was mocking and moved on to a different target. "Those stupid settlers can't really have been psychics," he said, sniggering. "If I was a psychic, I'd have stopped the volcano with my mind, or at least put some kind of force field around myself." Kennan's self-belief was known throughout the academy, as was his inability to learn from his mistakes. He was the cadet who had refused to believe that a night on the ice fields would require anything more than a thick sleeping bag and a porter tank of hot beverages, and as a result had spent the next week lying naked on the infirmary heat bed.
"Didn't they teach you anything at school?"
snapped a girl beside him. Marza.
"Even if it was possible to do that, and by the way, I can assure you it isn't, nobody had any idea that the volcano would erupt. It took them all by surprise. But that doesn't mean they weren't psychics. People who come here are still finding psychic residue."
Bernice couldn't resist joining the conversation.
"What's psychic residue?" "Well, when psychically sensitive people come here, they tend to feel uncomfortable," replied Marza. "They pick up the stray thoughts now and again from the bodies under the ground. Bits and pieces of what those poor people were thinking when they died. That's what the experts believe anyway."
Her snappishness gone, Marza had taken on the tone of a rather patronising primary school teacher. Bernice sighed, resigning herself to the fact that so long as she was stuck in her rabbit, none of her fellow cadets would treat her as an equal. Not even the only grown-up in the room voice could save her now.
"They were probably thinking, I should have known this would happen," said Kennan, sniggering again.
Marza didn't reply, but Bernice was sure she was rolling her eyes.
"Wait, bodies under the ground," said Bernice. "They just left them there. Nobody came to give them decent burials." "What the hell do you expect?"
answered Marza scornfully. The primary school teacher was gone and she was back to her old abrasive self.
"The whole continent was buried under tons of volcanic rubbish. By the time the planet was safe to visit, it had set solid. They're still digging up dead bodies, all dried out and preserved. Most of the time there's no way to identify them, and they end up in museums for school kids and tourists to stare at.
Nice, Bernice replied, thankful that her shudder did not pass along her suit.
Oh, and Kenan,
Marza added, turning back to the male cadet.
You better hope you're not psychic, because those bodies have still got psychic residue clinging to them, and crazy stuff can happen when they feel the presence of another psychic.
The cadet's ears were suddenly filled with the loud noise of a throat being cleared over the comlinks. It was Officer Zhang, monitoring from the pod above. Time for banter's over. The target drones are out there. Get started. Bernice turned off her comlink with a flick of a lever and adjusted a dial on the side of her headset. A graphic appeared in her visor's display. A blue dot in the centre of a grey square showed her location, while the direction of the drone was indicated by dim red ripples emanating from one of the corners. She adjusted a second dial, and her headset began to emit a low beeping at 1 second intervals. It was time to start. Bernice turned her bunny suit to the southwest and headed off in the direction of the digital signals, away from the other cadets who were dispersing across the land. As she progressed, the ripples on her display became a little thicker and the beeps started coming at a slightly faster pace. She was approaching the drone. Goethe was not the most scenic place that Bernice had visited. Sometimes the Academy's training exercises treated the cadets to an unforgettable sight, such as the carved cliff faces of Merit, or the glowing tube cities that illuminated Zalotl. But this wasteland of a world offered little such appeal. The white soil stretched out for as far as she could see, with only the occasional building to break the monotony. As no one lived on this planet anymore, she knew that these structures were uninhabited. They would be automated refueling depots and vending machine markets, run by some off-world company, offering supplies to any passing space tours. The mechanically run buildings were inexpensive to maintain, and probably pulled in enough money to operate on the off chance that somebody would come by and blow their credits. More poignant were the automated museums that Bernice passed a few times. Goethe's tragic history held plenty of fascination for the paying public. Little wonder that some company somewhere had built a cottage industry around the luckless colonists. Most of what made Goethe interesting was buried under the soil, Bernice thought to herself. The very soil over which her furry exosuit was trudging. Trudging? This blasted terrain seemed to be having an effect on her suit. As she felt her movements become increasingly sluggish, Bernice uttered a few choice expletives about the planet's soft soil. Then she realized that it was not just the legs. The arms of her suit were also moving slower than before. In fact, her entire exosuit felt as though it would grind to a halt at any minute. She sank back in her mechanical frame and rolled her eyes. Of course, the bloody rabbit suit would turn out to be defective as well as ridiculous. Then, something moved in front of her, and the suit jolted forward, then stopped completely. Bernice could see shifting in the ground, like the movements of a burrowing animal. A large burrowing animal, the size of a human being. She recalled her trip to Zalotl the previous year, when the training exercise had been disrupted by a cluster of bioluminescent scavenger worms camouflaged amongst the neon lights. Her mind flicked through the day's briefing, but she could recall no mention of subterranean creatures on Goethe. Surely someone would have mentioned if the local wildlife posed any sort of hazard. The soil burst open, wads of dirt flying into the air. A dry, brown mass shot out from below and landed on the surface, looking like a bundle of tree roots. It was moving in a series of twitches and judders, and Bernice tried to make out exactly what the thing in front of her was. She looked closer and felt a sudden heave in her stomach when she realised that the quivering, dried-out mass was topped by a human head. It was shrivelled and expressionless, but the eyes, nose and mouth left no doubt as to what lay before her. A mummified corpse. a mummified corpse that was still moving. Every instinct in Bernice's mind was screaming at her to turn and run. But the suit trapped her. She merely watched, her body sealed in its mechanical prison. The mummy appeared to be moving along the ground towards Bernice. Watching it get closer, she realized that it was not crawling in the manner that a living person would, with all the muscles in the body working as part of a whole. Instead, each of its limbs appeared to be hopping along independently. One of the mummy's arms would jump towards Bernice, tugging the rest of the body along like lifeless dead weight. Then one of the legs would leap forwards and give the body another tug. The moving parts were not propelled by muscles. Instead, they were being animated by an unseen force. Telekinesis? Psychic residue? All thoughts of the training exercise, the target drone, and even the floppy pink ears on her headset vanished from Bernice's mind. She sat, wide-eyed and slack-jawed, as the mummy approached. She noticed that the movements were speeding up, with the body parts starting to hop along simultaneously rather than one at a time. Then, when it was only 3 or so meters away from Bernice's exosuit, the mummy stood up. Once again, nobody would mistake this action for that of a living person. The mummy resembled a puppet held by unseen strings and controlled by a puppeteer who had only the dimmest memory of what human movement looked like. The tracking device and the bunny suit's headset were still active, letting out a string of beeps. Eyes fixed on the grotesque sight before her, Bernice lifted her hand, adjusted the dial, and proceeded to stare in silence. "It can't get me in here," she said to herself in a low voice. "It can't get me in here. It can't get me in here. It can't get..." Then the mummy's entire body moved in a sudden jerk, and the exosuit lurched towards it. Bernice let out a short scream and tried to pull away, but her movements were still sluggish. Sparks flew out of the suit's joints as it strained against the telekinetic force. Frantically, she tried to understand what was happening. What had Maza said? Dead bodies being dug up, crazy things happening. The person whose corpse dangled before her had been killed in a sudden volcanic eruption. It was entirely possible that immense psychic energy had manifested moments before their death. Who knew how much of that energy could be locked away in that dried-up body? Bernice had heard stories about psychics. Their powers could double or even quadruple in times of extreme stress. Just last year, a cadet had mentally deactivated a whole platoon of combat synths at the last minute of an exercise, resulting in his being fast-tracked to the psychic division on a different base. His irritating girlfriend, Roxanne, had cried for weeks. Had something about her arrival caused this, Bernice wondered? Was she somehow stressing the dead body out? But she was no psychic, so how could she have awoken the mummy? Bernice tried to flick the lever to activate her comlink, but it was stuck fast. She freed her arm from the limb of her exosuit and rummaged around for the emergency communication device. She found the small oblong tablet and turned it on, only for it to crackle and emit a shower of sparks. Bernice let out a yelp and hurled the device through the refuse hatch, watching as it exploded on contact with the ground. Alone in the wasteland, she had nobody to scream for, but she screamed all the same. Bernice stared at the mummy as it juddered and convulsed. She could easily crush it. In fact, that was almost certainly what would happen as the result of the mummy pulling her suit towards it. But if such strong psychic residue could exist in that shriveled husk, it could also exist in the broken fragments of a husk. And the closer she got to the mummy, the more damage her suit would sustain. Another shower of sparks flew out of her armour. She had to get out of there. Artillery was no use. Communication was no use. And her suit's furry pink legs were no use. Her sole remaining tool was the exosuit's left arm, with its weapons designed for specialised scenarios and emergencies, situations when all other options were off the table, such as times when a hasty retreat was the only option and extra propulsion would be more useful than firepower. Bernice stretched out the left arm. For a split second she pointed it at the mummy, but a feeling of pity took over, and she adjusted her aim to a few metres away from the corpse. She clenched her left fist around the internal controls. A blast of light shot from the suit's palm, and Benice was hurtling away in a mighty rabbit hop, the mummy vanishing into the distance. After about 150 metres, the emergency boost petered out, and the suit came to a standstill, mercifully still upright. Breathing heavily, Bernice took in her new surroundings. The wasteland still stretched into the horizon. There was still nobody else around, but the area had a few of the automated buildings. Feeling some ominous quivers in her damaged exosuit, Bernice activated the emergency release, and a series of hatches opened up on the front of the suit, allowing her to slip out of her headset and jump to the ground. The big bunny loomed above her, its pink fur now mottled with blackened patches where it had been singed by the sparks. She cast a glance behind her. There, where the land met the sky, was a shape. It was a mere black speck at present, but she still recognised the juddering movements of the mummy. While the psychically animated body was not approaching at a fast rate, it was approaching nonetheless, and would easily catch up with her. She let out a grunt and kicked a wad of soil in despair. Casting a look at the battered mechanical rabbit suit beside her, Bernice pictured what kind of damage the mummy could do to her own body. She needed to escape. A featureless building loomed nearby, and with no other option left, she ducked inside. The building turned out to be a museum, if not a particularly well-curated one. Bernice found herself surrounded by objects displayed behind sheets of glass. Items of clothing, various works of art, pieces of machinery designed for psychic operation, all dug out of Goethe's ruins after the volcano erupted. The closest thing to another person was a tall screen displaying an unconvincing computer-generated face.
"Enjoy your visit," it chirped. "All donations are gratefully received."
It repeated the message every so often, somehow playing despite the large stain of some unidentifiable liquid across the screen. Bernice looked in vain for a public communicator, but all she could find were more artifacts from the time before Goethe's cataclysm. Hanging on the wall was a picture that showed a group of sword-wielding men in gaudy outfits, surrounded by weird tentacled monsters. A notice nearby explained that the image depicted characters from a popular virtual reality saga and had been painted telekinetically by an avid fan as a gift for a friend. A few feet away was an audio device inviting visitors to put on headphones and listen to music files obtained from a pre-volcano hard drive. She turned around the room, taking it all in. Here were creased posters advertising VR sims. There were mass-produced clothes influenced by the costumes of popular entertainers. Nearby were parts of vehicles with now meaningless slogans neatly transferred onto them. Things that were mundane in their day, but now, through accidents of preservation, the last relics of a dead society. Bernice descended a small flight of stairs. On either side of her, video screens were showing documentary clips. Presenters held artifacts up to cameras and described how they were used on Goethe before the volcano erupted. A glass sheet that could display projected thought forms for the amusement of children. A clear box containing an elaborate array of small metal balls presenting a puzzle to be solved with telekinesis. A cutlery set in which every piece was bent in two, the owner having let out a particularly large psychic blast when caught by the eruption during dinner. At the bottom of the stairs, she was confronted by a familiar, mummified human form. Bernice let out a sharp gasp and stumbled backwards. "Get a grip, Benny," she muttered to herself. This mummy was propped upright in a glass cabinet. Although similar to the one that had pursued her outside, it showed no signs of moving. It simply stood, its empty eyes gazing outwards at the remnants of its lost world. A plastic notice at the bottom of the cabinet read, matter-of-factly, "Mummified remains of hypervolcano victim. Early 30s. Identity unknown." Bernice reached out and placed her fingers against the wall of glass. Her reflection overlapped with the mummy inside. In that reflection, Bernice glimpsed a little tuft of pink behind her.
What?
She spun round and saw a small cranny with a display of children's toys. Some were hard plastic, others soft fur. A few depicted armoured swordsmen or costumed crime fighters from VR sims. But most were based on various animals. It occurred to Bernice that if these species represented by these toys had been native to pre-eruption Goethe, they would almost certainly be extinct now, and felt a wave of sorrow. But this emotion was overwhelmed by her realization that the toys occupying the middle shelf looked very much like pink bunnies. They were not identical to the familiar terrestrial rabbit, of course. Each one had six limbs and a pair of long, floppy ears that jutted out horizontally rather than upwards. Despite this, the toys resembled pink bunnies just as much as her exosuit did. Suddenly, Bernice collapsed into uncontrollable giggles. The tension that had built up inside her came gushing out. This was all a big joke. It had to be. First, she was made to wear a pink bunny battle suit. Now came the punchline. The suit failed her, and she was forced to hide amongst more pink bunnies. Was this some kind of prank? There was no way it could be a coincidence. She had a sudden mental image of the mummy pulling off the mask to reveal Kenan having a good laugh at her expense. Her giggling stopped, and she stood up. No, she said to herself, no. It can't be a setup. None of the cadets could have staged a stunt like this. Which means that the mummy chasing me is real. So it's down to me to figure out what to do. She rubbed her head. Something woke that mummy. But what? Had Bernice been a psychic, she could perhaps have dipped into the residual memories of the mummy outside and tugged out a mental image or two. She did not have that ability. But she did have the next best thing, her imagination. She stooped down and looked at the notices on the exhibit, as intent as an Egyptologist poring over hieroglyphs. The notice below the rabbit-like dolls stated that these were the most popular toy in the year the volcano erupted. Bernice began pacing around the room. She tried to picture Goethe as it once existed, and pieced together a mental image of the exhibit surrounding her. In her mind, she populated the planet with children. Children playing with pink cuddly toys, little realizing that they would soon be obliterated by a volcanic eruption. She could feel tears coming and closed her eyes tight. She pictured a person walking to the shopping center to buy a toy for her child. Perhaps a father, perhaps a mother. Bernice pinched her thumb and forefinger over her eyes as she tried to clarify the image in her head. Maybe it was their birthday? Or maybe the child had done well at school and the mother wanted to reward them. Or maybe she hadn't seen the child in a long time. She imagined a flash of light, the sky going dark, the woman never reaching the shop. She visualized the woman's body. Buried under the soil, shriveled but preserved, the psychic residue still strong enough to register a few images from the surface world. The last vestiges of the dead woman's mental processes suddenly jump-started by an image that held particular importance to her. Bernice spun to face the rows of toys. She pulled a cuboid fire extinguisher off the wall and bashed it into the cabinet, breaking the glass into splinters. As she took one of the pink dolls from inside, the guilt she felt at this theft mingled with relief that the museum was apparently too run down to have a functioning security system. She remembered the recorded voice near the entrance. Any donations will be gratefully received, and threw a wad of credit notes into the smashed cabinet before leaving, the cuddly pink bunny alien under her arm. When she got outside, she saw that the mummy was still slowly approaching. It was now close enough for her to just about make out its flailing limbs and the clouds of dust they were kicking up. Bernice stood a few metres in front of her stationary exosuit and waited. She had no weapons this time, no military training that could help her in this scenario. just a pink toy bunny, and the conviction that she was doing the right thing. All she could do at this point was to make sure this conviction never faltered. The sun was descending, and the white soil was bathed in a red glow that grew richer as the mummy reached the museum. When it was a few meters away from Bernice, she held out the doll in front of her. "This is what you're looking for, isn't it?" she asked the mummy as it paused before her, its body swaying like seaweed in water. "Not me, or my suit. You want this toy for your child." She knew that her words would not be understood. She realized full well that all intelligence and personality had long since departed that sad old husk. Her words were intended purely to help focus her own mind and avoid panic. Taking a deep breath, she moved slowly forward and carefully lowered the doll into the mummy's dusty arms. For the first time since Bernice had seen it, the mummy performed what resembled a natural human movement as it took the doll from Bernice's hands. Then the dried body turned and began shuffling away. Bernice knew exactly what it was looking for this time. Together, the teenage girl and the century-old mummy made their way through the wasteland, the red sunset having taken on an almost violet hue as Goethe's star descended. Bernice made no attempt to measure the length she travelled, any more than a sleepwalker would measure a trip out of bed. She wore a vacant smile on her face as the mummy finally collapsed in a heap over an empty patch of ground, still holding the doll, while nearby the soil began to bulge and bubble. Once again, something was trying to escape from beneath the surface, but now the process that occurred in front of Bernice seemed as natural to her as a spider spinning a web or a caterpillar building a cocoon. A second, smaller mummy slipped out of the soil and embraced the first, which let out a few shakes in response. In a matter of seconds, both of them had fallen still on the white ground. The judders of agitation, of desperation, were no more. The two bodies now lay peacefully. Their taut, dried skin even lent them expressions of calmness. Cradled between the mother and daughter was the pink doll. Bernice looked at the bodies. "You know, I had a favourite doll as a kid too," she said to them. "I can remember that time my mother went to fetch it and..." She stopped herself. Visiting the past was one thing. Dwelling in it would be quite another. Bernice slipped off her jacket and wrapped up the two bodies, careful not to dislodge their final embrace. It did not take long for her to dig a hole in the soft ground, even though she had no shovel and had to use a large shard of scrap metal found nearby. The deed done, she left the metallic fragment wedged upright in the ground as a makeshift gravestone. Night was falling, but Bernice could still make out her tracks. The serenity of the preceding scene vanished from her mind as she sprinted along them back towards her exosuit. All the way, her impending confrontation with Officer Zhang rang through her head. How much of her story would be believed? She would definitely have to omit the museum robbery from her account for a start. Still, the sorry state of her suit was evidence enough that she'd had technical problems. Bernice reached her fluffy exosuit and climbed inside. As battered as it was, she reasoned that it would be safe for a short walk if nothing else. She activated the tracking device, letting out a small sigh of relief when she saw that the drone was fairly close. She pushed the comlink lever, half hoping that it would be broken, and shut her eyes in resignation when the link activated.
"Summerfield, is that you?"
It was Officer Zhang, and the exasperation in his voice was palpable.
"Where the hell have you been?"
In the background were the groans and sniggers of her fellow cadets, who had doubtless captured their target drones hours ago.
"Summerfield reporting," she said into the comlink. "Technical difficulties overcome. Resuming exercise. Will issue full report upon return."
After the rest of the day's events, the completion of her training exercise seemed something of an anticlimax. Freed from the influence of the mummy, her suit was now moving at a reasonable pace.
Bernice followed the bleeps of her tracking device over yet another stretch of wasteland until she found the drone hovering in midair. She grabbed it, deactivated its flight mechanism, and headed back to the awaiting pod. As she approached, she girded herself for her reception. This would not improve her popularity, but she comforted herself with the knowledge that her popularity could hardly sink any lower. It would be a simple matter of gritting her teeth to survive the coming days. Perhaps weeks. Bernice arrived at the pod just as the sky was fading to pitch black, the white ground now shining with indigo moonlight. She approached the entrance, her floppy pink ears blowing in the wind, and saw that nobody was waiting for her inside. The other cadets had long since left their suits in the pod's hangar and headed to the general hall to get some food. She did not mind. She relished the thought of being alone with Goethe, if only for a few minutes more. She turned and cast one final look over the wasteland. "Goodbye, Goethe," she said. She thought of just how many stories were buried in that glistening soil, waiting for someone out there to tell them. The door closed, and Bernice started making her way to the hangar. Flakes of white soil tumbled from her fluffy pink suit and lay gleaming in the artificial light.